Okay, so look, I'm going to open it for questions. Either raise your hand, make eye contact with me, and it's questions I want, not a 10-minute sermon. Okay, so it is questions. We've heard the perspectives of our two participants, so I'm limiting you about two sentences. Any more than that is just cut off. So, first question, John. Okay, go ahead.
My question is for Reverend Gibson. You know, you keep hearing the patients, it has to go, it's one side and it's coming out with prejudice deciding, you know, it's anti-Orient, it's anti-Unionism, it's anti-PGVL, it's this and that and everything else. And there have been at least two, if not three, opportunities to get rid of the Prayers Commission. I think a couple of years ago, even the DUP recommended an alternative to the Prayers Commission that Orange Order and the issues accepted. But I'm talking specifically about Haas, because I've read the Haas proposal in training in some detail, and the Orange Order has refused to sign up to it without giving an explanation. So, you know, could you tell us just exactly what was you found objectionable about the Haas proposals in training?
Sure. Just wasn't the Orange Order found that objectionable, no unionist party would sign up to it, and that was without even talking to the Orange Order. So they immediately looked at it, and I was there, and they didn't even have to ask me, Mervyn, what's the Order's view of it, because it was unanimous that we weren't signing up to the Haas proposals.
Yeah, but that was a conclusion of several months.
John, let him finish, just an end of the day. It's more helpful
over here. Something goes on for 5 years doesn't make it right, because it went on for 5 years. It has to be right, and we have to get this right this time, because I think we're only going to have one sort of bite at the cherry to get it right again. And I have no issue with a regulatory body. I've said that from the start. But one of the first things I say when I'm talking to the Orange men about this, I say, lads, we're not going to get what we want. Every parade's not going to go ahead as we think we'd just go ahead and do it. Is if we buy into a system, and that's why it needs to be a fair system, we'll get chinned again in parades and protests will get chinned. Hopefully it doesn't come to that, we'll sort it out before then. But we will have to accept that we may not get some parades. But if we buy into the system, that's the difference. Because we believe then it's a fair system and with a fair crack of the whip. With the current legislation, as I tried to outline earlier, it clearly stacked against us. It clearly says if there's a breakdown in community relations, if there's violence going to be caused, they almost have to certainly ban it or the compound, reroute it or put determinations on it, conditions on it. So all we're saying is we want a body where the legislation doesn't say that, because this myth that only 4% of parades. Yes, that's the practical outworking. But every one of those parades could be contentious under the current legislation. And we're saying we need legislation where that's not the case. It's not a protester's charter. And that's what the type of legislation we're looking for. That's fair to everyone. It's fair to those who want to protest, but also fair to those who want to parade. Where at the minute, it's a one-way scenario, as far as we're concerned. And it's only Londonderry has been used as an example. Londonderry, I'd say, is a benign benevolence by the Republican movement. It was a specific case, I understand that, Prentice Boys of Derry there preserving their parades, but they could withdraw that consent tomorrow by just going to the Parades Commission. They could go to the Parades Commission and say, no, we don't like that anymore, and the parade's banned. What we're saying, there should be legislation there that is fair when they go, everything's taken into account to do with parades, just not one particular side.
Yeah, but I don't think you've answered my question. What was wrong with the
hospital? What was wrong? I'm actually trying to remember what was in the hospital. Even though I left them to 6 o'clock in the morning. I have to say, I haven't wanted to look at them since so many. I've looked at them once or twice since then. The code of conduct was one of the issues, I have to say. Some of the things in the code of conduct were quite stringent, and I found, I believe, unreasonable, as did the other rest of unionism who was in the room. Actually looking for a song. Can you remember what else we objected to? Genuine, it's just not looked at. I should have read, no, he was arguing that they were acceptable. But I would have to look up the details again, but there was a few general things. The code of conduct comes to mind. I think we were happy enough with the way it was going to be administered. You know, it wasn't going to be like you're almost a bail applicant now, going to the police station, stand waiting the sergeant to hand in your forms. Like, that's to do a legitimate parade. It's, you know, it's a disgrace, the current system, in many ways, but we live with it and work with it. But what I could want that change, that would have been easy enough to change. It's also then when you get to the criteria of objections, what's taken into account, and that's where the rubber hit the road as well. What was some wanted cost taken into account, that type of thing. But I could come back to you at some stage and give you a lift.
I've been asking people that question for months and nobody's really given me a good answer.
If you give me your email, I'll send you. Genuinely, I'll send you what I found objectionable.
We're trying to find out for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, no, thank you, John. Okay, next question. Serious, come on.
It's
all sorted. Brian Irvine, well, go ahead.
Why did the Orange Order turn down the suggestion, the agreement that will be reached by Robinson and McGuinness?
Clearly, there was a couple of strategic review and parades. We had an agreement, but it was never made public. But come to the one you're talking about is the Hillsborough agreement. I've said publicly before, Wyatt, I don't overstress it now, but it was internal unionist politics. It was turned out it wasn't necessarily the Orange Order totally. There was only the DUP were involved in negotiating that. I was part of the negotiations. I believe it wasn't a perfect deal, but it was moving us on from where we were. We took it to Grand Lodge, and I think by 5 votes it was defeated. And I believe it was some of the other unionist parties playing politics that weren't involved, and I've said that. But I wouldn't do a in-depth interview about it at this stage because we're cooperating quite well at the moment. But that, on public record, for saying the unionist parties would deny that. But I don't think we were far away from being accepted then. And I was as disappointed as anyone, as an Orange man who took it and recommended it to Grand Lodge, and had the full backing of the leadership at that time. But you can get into all the ifs and buts, who was at the meeting, the man who were at the meeting wasn't, well, you know, democracy is democracy. If they've been defeated by 1 or 2 votes,
could that be used as a basis for future talks?
I think all three processes are something in them all we can build on and tweak it. And there's, equally, let me say, there was people who genuinely didn't like that deal. I have no issue with that, because you're not going to get a thing that everybody likes, particularly an organisation as broad as ours and the institution. And if people are genuinely agree, I have no issue with that whatsoever. If it had been defeated in what I term for genuine reasons, I would have accepted that. So I think there's something in them all that we can build on. The nucleus is there. It needs tweaked this and that way, and people have their emphasis, so I think it needs to be like that. And once you get into committee organising as a Presbyterian, I know what it's like. You know, I think committees to sign camels, you know, supposed to be a horse, you know, add this on, put that on. But I think there's a nucleus somewhere in there of moving forward. I think we're down to the crux matters, like the ultimately what the whatever panel or whatever it is takes that decision, the criteria for that, the code of conduct. But equally, I have to say, we have shifted a long way in the order, in the sense of we believe in front loading this problem. We have given the, you know, local lodges to try and come up with local solutions, because they, local people know local people, who can talk, who can't. There's areas where the hurt's so strong from the troubles it's difficult to talk. There's other areas are more flexible around that, so we've given local autonomy to each lodge or organising body to decide how best to move forward, who they talk to, when they talk. So whereas one time we were probably went down to, you know, initially it was all regulation, you know, everything, but I think if we put it down to the point of negotiation or talking about confident conversation about parade and trying to come to accommodation and address genuine concerns. Part of our issue was we felt a lot of the concerns weren't genuine. If they're genuine concerns, I think they need addressed.
There's been a number of reviews since the parade commission was formed in 1988, and it's interesting because there's a number of common threads that run through all the reviews. One was the need for a regulatory body, which everyone signed up to, that it should be a rights-based approach in relation to dealing with parade and disputes, that the best mechanism for trying to resolve parade and disputes was local dialogue, local solutions. Now, they go from right through from the strategic review, it was, 2007, into Hillsborough, and into the Haas and the all-party talks. So they're the broad building blocks in relation to any framework for resolving disputes. The problem lies in the specifics of it. For example, what's contained within a code of conduct? And that was one of the main issues around the Haas situation. There was around criteria, because apart from a human rights framework, there's a number of criteria which any regulatory body would have due regard to in relation to decision-making. Mervyn referred to some of them was public order, community impact, disruption to the local community, etc. And the hard stuff we brought on about the economics of it. And the current climate, we can't leave economics out of it. You know, if you look at the we were up at Stormont today dealing with a budget for 15-16. You're talking about major cuts because of appreciation, the Black Grant, etc. So we can't just say, you know, which isn't an issue in relation to parading. It's the cost of contention which is the issue of parades and protests in relation to it. And as a society as a whole, we have to recognise that. There's an example in Scotland where all the parading bodies, not just Anne Republican, but were called in by the police in Scotland, said we can no longer afford to police so many parades. Can you reduce the number of parades? And there's broad consensus, broad agreement that they had a reduction. I can't remember the overall cost in terms of reduction, etc. You know, so we need to get real about this, folks. We can't. The status quo just is no longer sustainable in terms of cost, social cost, political cost, and economic cost in relation to contention. Hence the need for a resolution as soon as possible. And I think the building blocks that I'm just referring to, I think, give us the means. We just need to put the detail in relation to, well, what do you mean by a code of conduct? Can we get broad agreement around it? And what type of regulatory body should be put in place? And who's responsibility for it?
Okay. Linda, then Jim. Then Jim.
As you know, I'm from Newton Arch Road and I grew up going to see the bands. I took my children to see the bands, my grandchildren go to see the bands. I don't agree with the situation that are going. I think the bands should be, lodges should be allowed to walk up there. But earlier this year, I was condemned by a leading member of the Orange Order who condemned me and condemned my project and said Protestants shouldn't learn Irish, even though he used the language himself. I was then invited up to the headquarters to speak with the Grand Master of the Orange Order and other members, and I thought naively for an apology, and I was again condemned. I could only use it as a good telling off, I could say. And what I would say to you is, how can an organisation which displays such intolerance ask for tolerance? Because to me it's tolerance that's needed, and I show tolerance. The people that come to my classes show tolerance, and some of them are members of the Orange Order. But the Orange Order is never going to get anywhere, in my opinion, until it shows tolerance, and that is also tolerance to people from within the nationalist community. I have Catholic relatives. If I was a member of the Orange Order would prohibit me from going to their funerals.
No.
Is that what it's
on? No, you're right, but let me say, it's yourself decide whether you stay in an organisation that does that.
Well,
so it's yourself,
yes.
You know.
It's, yes, but it's still the organisation that's the root. And I feel, and I maybe this is a naive thing for me to say, but I feel the Orange Order could go such a long way if it said, you know what, you know, this is our history, but of course, why would we mind any of our members going to the funeral of a Catholic friend or relative? And I think that would be such a symbolic show of tolerance by the Orange Order, and maybe that would be returned.
A couple of things. Irish language, I have no objection to anybody learning the Irish language, no objection to anybody learning French or German, but I do think it would be naive to think, I'm not saying you are naive, Linda, but naive to think the Irish language hasn't been used as a tool, as a political tool over years. So it wasn't necessarily, so I can understand attitudes towards it, I have to say. But equally, I don't think anybody stopped going to your class in Newton Arch Road. You know, I think there was a bit of publicity around it at that time. But certainly, if somebody wants to learn Irish, more part of me, try to learn it in the police for a while, just to pass myself. JDS, JMR, that's Tommy Gomei, Board of the Mona, CAE, Board Falsey, you know. You know, so, what do you call it? I have no issues, so I think there is talk, but I can see people angry about the language in the sense because the way it was used, you know, it was used as a political tool. But I think it does a disservice to anybody who's genuinely into the language for the sake of language to object to anybody learning. With regard to the funerals, that's one of the rules of the institution. It's like any, like a church, like any organisation has rules. If you don't like those rules, don't belong to it. I would say there's several members believe it should be changed, several members believe it shouldn't be changed. And we're a democratic organisation to take decisions. But it is a difficult one because I can, Gloria Hunningford Fowler, a prime example, was an Orange man, didn't go to her wedding because she married a Roman Catholic. So if you change the rule now, you have a certain element there thinking, I missed my own daughter's wedding because of my principles and that, you know. So there'd be an element of the old schooler who obeyed that rule and said, why should change it? Equally, there's an element of those who said, yes, we should change it. Nobody doesn't go to the funeral. I think that the tradition, particularly in the rural areas, is you go to the funeral, you stand outside, but that's totally acknowledged by your Roman Catholic neighbours. You're there, you're acknowledging, you go to the wake, but you don't go in because the Mass is celebrated during the funeral, and that's the issue. The Mass is not against the individual. Equally, there's Orange Men break the rule. And if they break the rule, then they're taking their chances. It's up to them how strongly they want to do that. But I understand where you're coming from, and there's differences of opinion within the institution. But at this point in time, that's the rule. And if somebody doesn't like that rule, then they resign. People have resigned from the order because they say, my daughter's getting married and I'm going to the wedding, so it wouldn't be right to be a hypocrite to do it without resigning. That I have no issue with that whatsoever. Rules can be changed from within the organisation. I think at times some will be changed. But I think we're still coming out, or we still have this conflict mentality. It goes back to the point where I don't think we've sort of sussed it out in the unionist side how to deal with the peace process.
I do believe if that rule was changed, that would go a massive way to show the order as a tolerant organisation. And I think that's what it needs to do. If it wants to move on and it wants to make headway, I think it has to take the higher moral ground, in my opinion.
But, fair comment.
Okay, Jim?
Sean, you said that Sinn Féin were not waging a cultural war, and you then went on to say that the figures stacked up. But from the Saxony community that I come from, Garbacky Road and the Ormond Road and then the flags, they all add up to a cultural war within the community that I come from. And the flags and the flag protest damaged the work that was going on within Belfast specifically, of interface workers from both Loyalist and Republican communities. And I believe, in my personal opinion, has set the peace process back at least 10 to 15 years. So, I don't know how you say figures stack up when you say Sinn Féin are not waging a cultural war, because, I believe it's a cultural war, and I also believe that part of it is to ensure that yous show the dissidents that yous can be as green and maybe not greener than what they are themselves.
Well, I actually said was the figures don't stack up. In relation to accusations of the cultural war, we have less than 5% of over 4,000 parades contentious. So that would be my perspective in relation to it. In relation to the flag situation in Belfast was a result of a democratic vote at Belfast City Council. Everyone who partook in that vote had a mandate from their particular constituencies. So you either believe in democracy or you don't believe in democracy. There's decisions taken in the assembly where I work, I don't agree with them all, but respect them all, because people have got a democratic mandate. And if you're a democrat, you have to respect the wishes of votes in legislative assemblies, where it's the assembly itself or the councils right across the north. So it wasn't as if this was an arbitrary decision taken by Republicans. It was a result of a democratic vote.
So then you would accept when unionism was in power that it had the right to do what it done to what you said was an easy
war? When unionism was in power, you hadn't got a democratic society. That was a need for a good trade agreement where you had a level playing field. It's important you recognise that, Jim.
No.
Because that's...
You can't have it both ways, mate.
No, exactly. Well, we didn't have it both ways. We didn't have it anyway.
Just one at a time. Listen, one at a time.
We didn't have it anyway until 1998, where mechanisms were created which allowed nationalists for the first time ever to buy into the governance arrangements in the north. First time it ever happened. And the same with the Patent Commission. The Patent Commission allowed us to sign up to policing and criminal justice, because those issues were dealt with as a priority within those political negotiations. Now, if you create governance arrangements and you have democratic votes, you have to expect and respect the wishes of the people who take the votes. The vote had to want the other way, we would have had to accept it. The same way as this legislation comes out, which we don't like. It's the same as praise commission determinations. If you set up through legislation a body which is mandated to deal with contentious parades, I don't like every determination that was out, Jim. You know that yourself. But have the respect. The day we deviate from that, you're undermining the rule of law. It's the law of the jungle again. So we are Democrats or we're not Democrats. Sorry?
You can't change the meaning of democracy. On one hand, you say that because the vote was taken in the City Hall, that was a democratic right. And whenever unionism was in power in Northern Ireland, you're saying it wasn't a democratic right.
What we're saying is you hadn't got democratic institutions before 1998. That was a problem.
That's
now, if there's a vote tomorrow in Belfast City Hall, and their vote reverses the decision taking that flag, I mightn't like it as a Republican, but I'll respect it, because that's the democratic wish of the people of Belfast. Now, you accept that, or you don't accept it.
Okay, Brian, just one comment, because Jimmy was coming
just in front of you. Just to make a point of majoritarianism. The unionist parties and the government were criticised for 50 years because majoritarianism ruled. It was a fixed majority. Now what we see in nationalist-dominated councils, we have majoritarianism, where the rights and sensitivities of the unionist minority are trampled underfoot. And basically, that's what happened at the Belfast City Hall. That's what's happened in nationalist, in all nationalist councils that have a nationalist majority. They don't fly the flag in anything. And basically, what it is, it's just the reverse of the coin. And what they've criticised the unionists for doing for 50 years, nationalists are now doing themselves when they get a new majority. And they're flying in the face of the Equality Commission and the recommendations of the Equality Commission. For example, the naming of that playground after the Republican in Newry, supported by the SDLP and Sinn Féin. The Equality Commission recommended that they didn't call it that because it would offend and trample over the sensitivities of the minority in the council. That didn't matter a damn. So what we have now, what we need to do is now sort out the majoritarianism that's taking place in the councils now. And that's how an even playing field right across Northern Ireland, as well as Stormont.
Okay, Sean, respond to that. Yes.
Well, I have to take issue. I'll tell you why. Sinn Féin signed up to power sharing, and Sinn Féin facilitate power sharing, even though they've got a majority, and a fairly big majority in terms of West of the Bond, in terms of allocating committee places and different positions like that within the council remit to people from a different background. Now, that's a fact. It doesn't happen in majority unionist councils. That's a fact. So what you practice, you know, what you preach, you should also practice in relation to power sharing. In terms of the flag, the Sinn Féin position was equality or neutrality. No flags or both flags, because it's an issue of identity. It's not just about a flag. You know, I feel from, I'm Irish, you might feel you're British, some people might feel they're both. Right? So it's not just about flags, it's a question of identity. And this is where the debate within Haas was an issue about flags took over into identity, right? The issue around the park, right? The Equality Commission recognised there was a chill factor for people from a unionist background, etc. And this is where they made their ruin in relation to it. Be very careful what you wish for. You see, if that was applied right across the north, you're going to have major chill factors in relation to everything that happens in councils and public institutions like that.
Can I come back just there? One thing. Two flags or no flag.
Yeah.
But the point is, Sinn Féin have signed up to the fact that Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom until the majority of its people look otherwise. I mean, there's a foreign minister from the Republic who said that the flag of the United Kingdom, Great Britain and Northern Ireland, is a union flag. And the flag of the Irish Republic is the tricolour. And the thing is that those flags are limited to protocols and stuff like that. Right. Now, the point is, if you're saying to me that you will not accept or recognise the Union flag as the flag of the country of Northern Ireland, what you in fact are saying is, you know, we don't really recognise that Northern Ireland exists. We're not going to recognise it unless we have the flag of the Irish Republic. Now, the point is, you're going against the agreement that you signed up to.
No, well, I have to take issue with that as well.
Okay.
No, we're not. See, this is it. You have to read the Good Friday Agreement in the round, because it talked about party of esteem. I talked about the birthright of everyone to be Irish, British, or both, if you want. So if you recognise there are different identities within the North, right, how do you accommodate my sense of Irishness? How do I accommodate your sense of Britishness? So while, yes, Republicans recognise there can't be a change in the constitutional position until a majority of people in the North support that. That's well recognised. That was an integral part of the Good Friday Agreement. It wasn't the only part of the Good Friday Agreement. So where's party of esteem in relation to it? Part of the problem was issues like that could have been dealt with in a Bill of Rights. Who killed the Bill of Rights? It was unionists who killed the Bill of Rights. They objected to it. They said it was a Republican agenda. Rights are for everyone. Now, talking to some loyalist unionists, they recognise that was a disaster. We should have had a Bill of Rights. Because it's not just for nationalists, it's not just for Republicans. Rights are there for unionists as well in relation to it. So issues that should have been dealt with including parading, are coming back to haunt us. So the debate moved from flags into identity. And how can we accommodate each other that my Irishness is not a threat to your Britishness, and vice versa, your Britishness is not a threat to my Irishness. And how do we deal with that? And this is where we have the position of, you know, if you have two identities, which is clearly recognised within an international instrument, like a Good Friday Agreement, then how do we deal with that? How do we accommodate that? And that's where the Haas discussion started to go.
Okay, well, you've only one sovereignty, but and that's the United Kingdom.
Okay. Brian, Sean, you probably need to do a pint afterwards, because if not, the two of you are just going to ping pong us back and forward. Jimmy, then this young lady here, then Martin.
Well, Brian and Jim asked most of the questions I was going to ask there myself there, but on the parading itself there, and the parading commission, what Mr. Murray accepted all the decisions made against the loyalist parades were correct.
Was it correct? There are determinations made which I had a problem with from a Republican perspective, and I'm sure there are determinations which are made by the Parades Commission. The Mervyn would have.
Surely, if Sinn Féin are in a partnership and peace, surely if the Navy see that maybe some of the determinations were maybe wrong against the Unionist community, therefore they should speak up and maybe tell the Parades Commission that we should maybe change this and switch it around, and therefore that would be a way of reaching out.
Well, it depends what you mean by wrong. You know, because you have different perspectives in relation to parades.
Well, that's why I was asking, do you believe every determination against the Unionist population is right?
Well, I don't. People have different perspectives. We're right. Probably the vast majority of them are right from my perspective. You know what I mean? But like, you can't look at it in terms of one parade. If you're looking at it, let me finish. If you're looking at it from, say, an Ardoyne, I think it's about a package of parades, because you parades in the morning, you parades in the evening, right? And these are spread throughout the year. From my perspective, it's not. And it's the same on the Springfield Road. How can you deal with it in terms of a 50-50 scenario? That you can facilitate some praise, because morning praise are easier to deal with than the evening praise. That's where most of the problems are. There's obviously more people out in the street. Alcohol is a factor as well on both sides in relation to it. So can we make a resolution based on the fact that some praise get the green light, other praise are more difficult to manage, and that's where the problems are, and that's how we dealt with the determinations. So it's a package. We need to look at it in the round. So it's not just a question of saying are they right or wrong. It's saying how do we get a resolution. And I think the best way of getting a resolution, I've said earlier, is sitting down and talking it out. You know, you've had situations, you mentioned the Derry situation, also mentioned the Crumlin situation. We had a very dangerous situation going back a number of years ago where the county demonstration was in Crumlin, the same time on the 12th as a return parade for Ardoyne. And at the 11th hour, there was a sit-down between Norns and local residents, and they hatched out a resolution. Still got the parade, that wasn't the issue. It was around timing and the aspects of the parade itself. The parade went ahead as normal. The protesters had a protest in terms of banners. The Orange had their parade. See, within 10 minutes of the parade finishing, the protest banners were taken down and all the bunting put up by the Orange and their supporters was taken out as well. And who won that day? The people of Crumlin. Nobody lost. Everybody won. And that, I think, really is the essence of dialogue. If nobody felt they lost, nobody felt they had a victory. Everyone won in that sense, because people felt vindicated by both parading and by protesting, and they had that resolution satisfied everyone.
Okay, this young lady here.
Just a few issues just in some of the stuff Marvin said around that this is the kind of constitutional position or whatever. I mean, the reality is, I mean, you could stick to that and you're never going to get anywhere. Because for me, I mean, we're a society emerging in conflict. There's two national identities on the island in terms of Britishness and Irishness. And we need to find ways to respect folks of that. I mean, I was a Sinn Féin councillor in Belfast City Hall when the flag decision was taken. And what people aren't saying, there was 2 years of dialogue and negotiation before it led up to that decision. It wasn't just something that was decided on the 4th of December that year, and then that was it. And from the word go, there was engagement and dialogue with unionists and loyalist representatives on council around, can we find a compromise around this position? Because as Sean said, our position at that time was two flags or no flag. We had always consistently before voted against even having it on designated days, and we moved our position because we tried to play that out. And every time when you get back to the Good Friday Agreement, the room where both identities can be respected, how can you have an equal place for both identities, unionism could never give us an answer. They could never give us an answer within council around. They could say this is how our British identity needs to be reflected and respected around the flags, around the memorabilia, around parades, but they could never answer the question around how an Irish identity could be reflected or could be manifested through flags, through parades or whatever else. And I think that conversation, I mean, I welcome this discussion and conversation because this never gets out. You know, the fact that we tried to discuss the issue for 2 years never gets out, except the decision was just taken and, you know, Sinn Féin just kind of drove it through. It was done over 2 years of dialogue where we actually did move our position from neutrality to have two or none to actually vote in the 16 days. And that was actually a hard decision for us to go back to our community to say that we were actually voting to have the flag flying for the 16 days. But the reality, we need to sit down and to talk these issues out. We did try, but I think there is a thing within unionism that they're not actually letting their people know the conversations that they've been having. They're not having that conversation within their community, because that's something that we did to try and set your constituency base. And I think that's part of what's lacking. So I think the more of these type of dialogues that we can do, the better.
Was a speech. I don't know.
Well, it's just a right. How do you reflect or manifest?
I have to say, well, I'll be stupid. I still maintain there's. I have no issue with two identities. Always been two identities on the island of Ireland. I have no issue with that. But equally, it's one sovereignty. When you bring a flag down, you're saying to people, "This isn't the United Kingdom," and that's the issue.
Would you have both?
No, I wouldn't, because it's a sovereignty issue. I same way, I wouldn't expect Union Jack to fly in the Doyle or anywhere in the south, because it's a sovereign country. The Republic of Ireland is a sovereign country, which we recognised from the beginning. Sadly, they didn't until the Good Friday Agreement dropped the legal clause in Northern Ireland. But what do you call it? There's two identities here. What I wouldn't want to say is tell you how to express your identity. That's not for me to do, because I'm complaining you're dictating how I express my identity. So I certainly wouldn't be suggesting. I'd want to hear from you how you want to, you know, how you think you need to express your identity. But it'd be wrong for me to say, well, this is how you express your identity, because I don't want you telling me how to express mine. But equally, I want to do it in a way where it's not threatening.
Okay, I'll give you one example, Martin. And this happened during the strategic review when there was an agreement in St Andrews about the Irish Language Act. And I think it was Mr. Pooch, he was Minister for Arts and Culture then. And it wasn't only a rejection, an outright rejection, it was a way he rejected it. It was caused great hurt and pain within my community. And I knew that was going to have a major effect. Because if you talk about a cultural war, the fact, despite an agreement at St Andrews, that you would totally object to the establishment of an Irish Language Act. And it wasn't forcing the Irish language down anyone's throat. It was to allow to facilitate anyone who uses the Irish language, and not every Republican uses the Irish language, to allow to, within various institutions, to be able to use the language as a medium of conversation or communication, etc. So, you know, if you're talking about cultural wars, yeah. For me, was a sign, a blatant sign of a cultural war.
Is that not agreement with the British government, but not with between
Well, why should unions reject it?
I'm only saying, well, unions will have an opinion about it. But it's an agreement between, as far as I understand, the Republican movement and the British government. It wasn't
your
an agreement
government.
With the Unionist parties.
No, Brandon will agree with you.
You should be up here, Brandon.
Linda, control your husband. Okay. No easy task. Martin, you wanted in there. Martin and then Rob. The belly.
Gary, can I check? Do the ground rules allow me to ask you both a question?
Oh, yeah.
Sean, can I ask you any distinction between a response to the likes of, say, individual Orange Lodges as distinct from the bands? Because obviously, two completely different things. Is there an issue in the sense of, or help me understand, is it more a response to some of the bands? It's part of the difficulty. Or is it more a response to some of the lodges? That would be the question I want to ask you.
Jones, you'll have it first then, Martin? Yes, and then go back at Mervyn, then just.
Well, the organisers of parade are usually the Orange Order or some of the Royal Orders. Sometimes there are bomb parades and a particular bomb that organise the parade. So the issues with the organisers, because I firmly believe that where it's a protest or a parade, that the organiser has legal responsibility for the behaviour of anyone on parade or in protest, etc. I've organised protests and I accept fully my responsibility in relation to the protest. A couple of times I've been hauled down to Grosvenor Road Station in relation to protests, etc. And I had to give a rationale in terms of a particular incident that happened, etc. And I think that's only right. Because it's back to rights and responsibilities. I have a right to protest, I have a right to parade, but I've also got a responsibility to ensure that that parade or protest remains peaceful, etc. And it is done within the constraints, if there are any, outlined and any determination made by the Parades Commission. And you'll have various dynamics in relation to different parades. And Springfield Road, for example, it's around, there's only one outstanding issue, is route. It's about 100 yards. From an Oxford perspective, we'd want the full parade to come out Maggie's and proceed on up to Springfield Road. So it's not about no orange feet in Springfield Road. It's about recognising the sensitivities of people who live in a particular section of the Springfield Road. And somewhere else it's about respect. St Patrick's Chapel, Carrickhilder, St Matthew's Chapel in East Belfast. About, you know, an example would be if there's no music playing and pass the churches, that's the end of the problem as far as Republicans or Nazis are concerned who live in those areas. Another is its route, the situation in Ardoyne, etc. Carvacca Road, somebody mentioned as well. So there are different dynamics in relation to each parading scenario where you have a protest or contention around various parades. Who do you hold responsible for it? Ultimately, the parade organiser. Because if I organise a parade or I organise a protest, I'm ultimately responsible for that. I'm bringing people out onto the street. So there's a responsibility on myself or other people, if you're doing it collectively, to ensure that that happens in the way it should happen. That's in a determination or, you know, you're responsibly as a citizen in any society. Because you all know the consequences of any parade or protest getting out of hand. It just hasn't an effect in that specific area. It can spread like wildfire right across the north. It's Dumcree scenarios, etc. So there are different dynamics, and this is where you need a regulatory body that in the absence of dialogue or a failure in dialogue, that someone has to take a responsibility to say, well, there are competing rights here, and here's our analysis of those competing rights. As far as we're concerned, here's a determination which should deal with the balance in relation to those competing rights.
Okay. Questions for Mervyn then, Martin?
Well, I'm conscious this word Protestant would regularly be used, and I suppose to some extent, can you help me understand, is there a difference between Protestant, as I think I would understand it, and almost like cultural Protestantism?
Well, I think there is. I would speak of a pagan Protestantism, I have to say. I've no issue with that. I think the issue, the Protestant has become a label.
Yeah.
There's the Christian sense, the Reformed sense of the word as well. But I have to say, I would personally don't get hung up with the describe East Belfast as a Protestant community. That doesn't mean everybody's church going, signed up with the Reformation principles, and a born again Christian. You know, so some people get hung up on that. But I would talk about the Protestant. There'd be people who have no time for church. So other people have a bit of time for church, brought up in the tradition of the church and have respect for it. And there's other people are members of the church. So I think you used to have three different types. Pagan was one, political was the other, I can't remember the other. But there would be recognition of a difference. But I have to say, I don't get hung up on somebody using the term. To me, I know what it means. It means that community term. But people say they shouldn't call themselves Protestants, blah, blah. Equally, I know those who say you shouldn't call yourself Protestant at all. You're either a Christian or not a Christian and don't like the denominational labels. But, you know, so personally, I don't get hung up, but I do recognise the difference.